In our deep dive this week, we take a look at some undervalued stocks. Morgan Stanley put out a statement this week, or this past week rather, saying that South African stocks could potentially beat cash and bonds, and they're expecting that South African stocks could yield as much as 18% over the next year. And they gave their preferred picks, and there were a couple of nice things in there, the likes of Aspen, the likes of Discovery and First Rand. And those are very popular kind of picks. Those are the run-of-the-mill, what you'd expect from a Morgan Stanley. But we thought, why not look at it from a slightly different perspective? Why not look at it by taking a look at the most undervalued stocks that we can find? And there's a very intelligent lady who works at a company called FNB Wealth and Investments. In fact, she's the head of research, and she's joined us in studio, Chantal Marks, because she's got five or more undervalued stocks that she's been keeping an eye on. And I've been trying to get this information out of Chantal for the longest time. Chantal, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for coming through.
It's a massive pleasure. And I mean, I've had a love affair with SA Inc. and the unloved small and mid-cap space for years. And I have been wrong on some of them. But I think we're finally in a place where we can actually start seeing a proper revaluation in some of these more unloved shares, and perhaps not only cyclical support, because we're going to get lower interest rates and lower inflation over the next couple of years, but also some structural support from the growth story in South Africa potentially materializing. And I think even if that doesn't happen, these companies are so cheap. And you've got that cyclical support that I'm still super happy to put my weight behind them. And one of the companies has the word super in their name.
Before we get to that, perhaps this is a good starting point as well, is how do we define value? How do we define whether or not a stock is undervalued versus what we consider? I mean, there's many metrics that you can use, your balance sheet analytics, and you can do financial ratios and all those sorts of things. But there must be a point where you look at a stock and you say, there are other factors that I want to put into this basket that affect my opinion or my perception of what the value is of the stock. How do we determine what good value looks like?
Simplest sense, when your PE is your dividend yield, which is completely and absolutely crazy and shouldn't happen in any world at all. But I mean, heck, our banks just 4 months ago, PEs were equal dividend yields. And you're either going bankrupt or this is just crazy cheap. And in the case of banks, it was crazy cheap. Because I'm a simple oak. So I'm from Durban. I kind of stick to
less
that.
Is more.
Yeah, that's actually a really nice kind of trick to try and determine where the deep value is. I guess you can make it as simple or as complicated as you want to. You can build an entire big model on it. You can just look at some of the historic ratios. You can try and look at growth going forward. I guess it's a combination of all of those things. We always say that markets is part science, part art. And I think the art of identifying undervalued stocks is something that you kind of gain over time, that experience that you gain over time.
Another one that I like is I look at 10-year PE, and particularly in the South African environment, because it's been a tough 10 years. And when the forward PEs are below the 10-year mean, it means after a tough decade, they're cheaper than they've been in that decade.
Yeah.
You know, and look, some companies aren't going to make it, some go bust, et cetera, et cetera. But there are so many of them on our JSE. I mean, and not even the small caps, although that's where there's really value. There's just so many stocks where, I'm randomly looking at one on Chantal's list. Forward PE is 8.5, the 10-year mean is 16. 10 years and you're trading at half the average after a tough decade already. And to Chantal's point, I mean, I think I've said it before, I think we get 3% GDP in South Africa next year, easy. I mean, 3% is almost the... I know you look at me squiff. 1% is what we're doing. No load shedding or reduced load shedding takes us to 2%. Maybe a 0.4% or so from the money that's going to come from the two-pot system. So now we're at 2.4. Another 0.4 coming from interest rates coming down and washing money back into consumers' pockets. We're at 2.8. We haven't even done any work yet, and we're at a 2.8% GDP for 25.
Yeah, I mean, you literally just have to be a little bit better at Transnet and you get to 3%.
Well, they did get, what was it, an 18.5 billion rand loan recently?
Well, they did. And we saw from both Sasol and from Kumba, that Transnet is looking a little better. Andreas van Heerden has been saying for a year now that Transnet's been buying stuff from them. There's hope.
There's hope. Okay, let's get into the rest of that list, Chantal. What are your picks? Why these particular stocks from a valuation point of view, and why do you think they're the most undervalued?
So I'll start with the one I hinted at. So Supergroup, right? So Supergroup has a big subsidiary in Australia that is listed. And if you extract that valuation, that market valuation out of Supergroup's valuation, you basically have a company that's trading on a P of one or two. And we know that Supergroup is profitable. There has been a little bit of pressure more recently on the transport sector, but there's still a lot of room for them to grow, particularly if we do see economic growth improve. Supergroup is a trusted name in that space. And I think that it is not justifiable to have that company trade on a one or two times P. I think the other thing that you need to take into consideration is if a stock is that cheap, then it becomes a takeover target, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we've seen a lot of movement, especially in the logistics and transport space, in terms of corporate actions coming through from international companies. Imperial Logistics has been been bought out. There have been tie-ups between some of the other international logistics players and the local guys. So I think that you also have that as a potential catalyst for Supergroup as well. Then another big part of their businesses is the dealership business, right? And I think that that's probably one of the main reasons why it's under so much pressure from a valuation perspective. But we have cyclical tailwinds are coming.
Yeah.
So we have interest rates coming down. We have inflation coming down. We have a very old vehicle fleet in South Africa. And at some point, that replacement cycle will have to start accelerating. Mm. So I think that there are just so many reasons to like the company, and there are very little reasons not to like it at this point. Unfortunately, the market has disliked it for the last few years, and I've been a very, very sad little PA holder of Supergroup. But I think that we're finally at a point where the future is becoming a little clearer from a growth perspective.
Okay. Reunert?
I used to say that Reunert is the most boring company on the JSE.
It's also good old-fashioned industrial. I mean, like, I have no doubt their head office is a warehouse somewhere.
I used to watch their results as a young analyst and just kind of...
Nod off.
Not off. And it's just, they just do the basics and they do it well. And there's nothing sexy. There isn't a flashy presentation. There are no animations on the PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. It is just an industrial company that manufactures the nuts and bolts that keep South Africa together along with our hopes and dreams. So this company, there are three reasons why I really like it. The first thing is that if you are going to start seeing an improvement in infrastructure investment, and we have heard indications that South Africa is going to turn into a construction site. So there's that political will, I think, to do that. Secondly, there's a massive requirement to do that. And I think that they will be a beneficiary of that.
Okay.
Nuts, bolts, cables, all of those kinds of things. The second thing is that they have a really decent renewable energies business.
Yeah.
And I think that they'll continue to benefit from a move towards renewables. And I'm not talking about household solar panels. I'm talking about the big renewable projects.
And batteries and stuff.
Yes. And the unsexy bits of renewable energy, they're also quite involved in. So I think that that's going to be a continued growth vector for them. And then the final reason is they are just so conservative in the way that they manage their balance sheet. So the cash balance always looks pretty solid. There's never too much debt. They don't make crazy big acquisitions. It's just a really steady ship. So the combination of those three things, combined with the fact that they are still trading, I think, at pretty reasonable pretty reasonable valuation, offering a really solid dividend yield, makes it one of those stocks that I could go to bed easily having that stock in my portfolio.
136 years of unsexy work that's just been consistent.
Trading on a price to sales of one.
Of one.
One. Yeah, I would add two other bits to it. They've also got the defense business.
Mm.
There's a lot of war happening around the world right now. We don't like it, but there's money
to be
made there.
Mm.
And there was a problem with their Nashua, with the ports, which hurt the last set of numbers, which will correct itself into the next set of numbers as well. So notwithstanding, the last set of numbers were good. They could have been better.
Could have been better. Okay. Yeah, Master Drilling, that's on your list?
Yes. So Master Drilling is also one of those companies that I've loved for ages. One of the biggest issues with Master Drilling is liquidity isn't great.
Yeah.
But it is an absolutely excellent business. The main reason I like this, so I have red flags when it comes to certain stocks.
Okay.
A really charismatic CEO, sexy buildings at Melrose Arch where the headquarters are, but the company's quite small and still kind of trying to find its feet. Those are big red flags to me. These guys have green flag and green flag. They just say things how it is. When you interact with management, they are super straightforward in the way that they approach their business. They understand it extremely well. The CEO is the founder of the business and is a engineer with decades of experience. And their head offices are still in Vogtland. I love that. They are doing drilling work, not only in the South African mining space, but they are drilling across the African continent, in South America, in Australia. They're in Asia now as well. They are doing drilling work on that underground city in Saudi Arabia. So their drills and machines are being transported all over the world while they're still doing R&D and improvements and launching new products out of Vogtland. So
In rands. And I reckon
they're earning dollars.
Yeah, they're earning dollars.
They report dollars. And yes. in Vogtland, I mean, probably everything's cheap there.
Yeah. And their Canadian business is growing quite quickly. And I think that one of the potential catalysts for this business could be a secondary listing on an exchange like the Toronto Stock Exchange. I'm not sure if they'll end up doing it, but I think that that is a potential way for them to return some value to shareholders. Alternatively, this company could be subject to a company buyout or management buyout.
Yeah.
And I think that it'll be at a much higher valuation the way the company is trading right now. The stock has moved absolutely sideways over the last few years, and I think unjustifiably so. You're also going to probably get a really nice cyclical tailwind from commodity prices moving up over the next few years. We're at a bottom in terms of commodity prices. And even though these guys aren't necessarily one-for-one dependent on the commodity cycle, we will probably start seeing CapEx investment once we start seeing the commodity cycle turn a little bit by mines, because a lot of these big commodities are going to face a supply cliff if guys don't start investing.
PE 4.7, dividend yield 4.5.
There you go. You mentioned the sideways price movements, and you say it's been happening for the longest time. And as you say this, I think about the next pick that's on this list that Simon and I know hold, that I've certainly been a proponent of for I don't know how many years now, and that's City Lodge.
I don't hold my City Lodges anymore. I got impatient and took my...
Oh, you're going to be the catalyst. Your sale is going to be the catalyst.
I took my money a long time ago. I got out of City Lodge North for R5.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's one of those ones, you know, when you sell something and it doesn't go up?
Yeah.
And you feel like such a clever person. Oh, whenever I'm having a bad day, I go look at the City Lodge chart and I just feel that maybe I'm not so silly.
So, I mean, I've just gotten I know it sounds silly, but the best vibe from the management team over the last few reporting periods. They are really excited and energized about their business.
Yeah.
They're excited about the ads that they had at the cricket in January. They are excited about the food and beverage offering and the feedback that they're getting from their clients. And I think that this business is being overlooked as a tourism and hospitality trade, because we are seeing guys focus more on the Sun International and the Southern Suns. And rightly so. I mean, those guys would be your major beneficiaries from international tourism. But City Lodge is a different business to what it was prior to COVID-19.
Yes.
Prior to COVID-19.
You came on my show prior to COVID-19 and tell everyone to set it.
I told everyone to. Yes, I did.
Yes. It's the most hate I've ever got.
How the tables have turned.
Let's be clear, and I'm quickly trying to find the price. It was probably trading $50 at the time. Maybe only 40, but still.
Yeah. So it's a different business now. So prior to COVID-19, this business was focused on the business traveler and the convenience traveler. So you're staying over because you've got one night in Joburg before you go to the Kruger as an international tourist. As a South African businessman, you are on your way to Bloemfontein and you like resting at the road lodge for the night, that type of thing. But now this business is more, I think it's shifted itself towards the leisure travel market. That is why they've got the food and beverage offering and a pretty decent one at that. And their price points are really, really good. It is cheaper to stay at a City Lodge than it is to stay at an Airbnb in Cape Town. And I think both domestic tourism and international tourism will continue to grow. South Africa is a fantastic tourist destination. Post COVID-19, I think domestic tourism has really taken off in a big way because people were stuck at home and now they're getting to explore their country. And I think a company like City Lodge is going to benefit from that. Aside from that, lower interest rates, lower inflation, higher growth
structurally.
I want to get into the fifth one, but unfortunately we have run out of time. This goes by so quickly, right? It was like that. But what we're definitely going to do is we're going to have another conversation like this looking at international picks, because there are undervalued picks from around the world as well. Yeah. And I mean, if you're looking at balancing out your portfolio, that's something you definitely want to be looking to as well. Chantal, thank you so much for giving us your time and for coming through with such insightful thoughts around what SA Inc. looks like. I think it's definitely some optimism that has been missing from the market. And I know you and I, every time we've spoken, you've always had that level of optimism, but it's nice to be able to share it with everyone else. But for now, that's all the time we have.